Thank you for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. Talk from the heart, the mind, and the soul. And I'm your host, Andrew Fetter. Well, thank you. Man, I love hearing that. Oh, and I gotta thank Masonic Temple for allowing me the privilege of utilizing, of course, their song Blind, which is, of course, from Follow Me, their new album. And please do check them out at myspace.com/MASTEM. I know you'll like their stuff. And also, I have a couple announcements to spill out, as they say. I will be doing several book signing events here in Las Vegas. I plan to do some also in Los Angeles in the fall. But if you're out here in Las Vegas on, let's say, May 23rd, I will be doing an event at the Psychic Eye Bookstore at 6848 West Charleston, and that's, of course, on the cross streets of Rainbow and Charleston. Okay, again, that's May 23rd. That's on a Saturday. Again, in June 13th, from 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock, I will be doing a signing event at Barnes & Noble at the Crossroads Commons, which is at 8915 West Charleston. And in June 20th, that will be the day before Father's Day, doing a show at a signing event at Borders, that's on the Town Square at 6521 Las Vegas Boulevard. And I look forward to doing all those events. Also, if any of you, please do check out my past shows, and you can always send me some comments, information, questions, whatever's on your mind, of course, always at flyingpigs@artlover.com or myspace.com/AndrewFetter. And, of course, now I'm doing the Twitter thing at flyingpigs26. Now, I have a very, very, very special guest. He is a filmmaker, researcher, and his latest film is Chimatica. He also has done an extraordinary film called also Esoteric Agenda, which is an unbelievable movie in itself. And I feel highly honored to have him on my show because of the amount of knowledge and wisdom and understanding that he's trying to pass on to the masses. How you doing, Ben?
Not too bad. I'm really glad to be on this show. I'm really glad that there are more platforms out there other than just the typical, you know, get the word out about the NWO. I like the fact that there's platforms for more esoteric knowledge and the occult and things like that, which I know that you have a very good understanding of, so I'm glad that I have this opportunity to be on the show today.
Well, speaking of, like, on esoteric, which is a unique, I found that quite fascinating, the movie itself, because it does get into the, you know, the New World Order issues and all that. But when you go, hey, I want you to check out my movie about Chimatica, and when I saw that, I said, wow, that was really the icing on the cake. And everybody out there, you got to check this out. I mean, you did such a job of showing what's really important. You can't just, because everybody's doing Band-Aid issues over politics, fix this, they're basically playing the dyke routine, when they're not really getting to the real issues, which is what I want to, you know, ask you about, you know, and getting back to the very source of information that you've you get into. One aspect is you get into the, and everybody's into it, all the quantum theory between, which is not, it's cool, getting into the quantum theory and electromagnetic energies and energies and renaissance, which correlate to our DNA and both as well as our self and consciousness. How would you interrelate all those three for those out there who are listening to into a greater understanding of what you're trying to divulge as far as the relationship? And what is, I mean, everybody knows that there's DNA, and they assume that it helps it works as to create other proteins, but in real essence, it's really just a sort of like a chip in a computer delegating information. Am I correct?
In a sense, yes. I mean, there's two different ways to understand DNA. From what I've done, my research comes from, I believe it's Dr. Fred Bell, Leonard Horowitz, HeartMath Institute gets into it a little bit, but really what it is yes, there is the typical Watson and Crick view on DNA, which is all it is just, you know, some type of mechanism that, you know, with RNA, it reproduces itself, it gives the blueprint off, and then it starts producing amino acids and building, like, the building blocks of our life. So that's one way to look at it, and in a sense, there's a lot of, like, a Buddhist understanding of there being both the physical DNA and there being the spiritual DNA. And the reason why I don't necessarily subscribe to exactly that view, but I like the idea of there being more of an essence behind the DNA, because we were speaking briefly before the show about the Kabbalah, and in the understanding of the Tree of Life, there are 10 Sephiroth, and there's 9 before the 10th being the physical vehicle. So if you're looking at this in more of like a Kabbalistic way, the physical vehicle being the physical DNA, in a sense, is really just the last step in a process of creation. The previous 9 aren't even visible or tangible to our 5 senses. So the way that I like to at least get into it is there's much more than just the typical scientific, even the most leading scientific breakthroughs in, you know, in DNA and the best understanding that scientists have today. It still lacks a viewpoint of knowledge more on the esoteric, or at least in the intangible fields, because in the scientific realm, you're looking at how can we prove it through instrumentation? How can we prove it through intellect? So really, DNA, in its most basic sense, is a bioacoustic and a bioelectric transmitter and a receiver of energy. And that's really the best way that I could put it. It's a compact spiral instrument, really, and it maximizes it amplifies the energy and the environment, the vibrations from the environment, you know, the local environment around us, and it amplifies that through the body.
Electromagnetic energy, or what kind of energy? And also, I think the biggest problem, I think, in the scientific world, and this is just my view, is since in reality, and this is proven through quantum and as well as relativity, that the universe is infinite, and therefore to get truly understanding of an infinite duality, you have to apply the same type of methods. The problem is we tend, and even our scientists of today, are using old school methods of finite measurements as opposed to utilizing the hypothesis of an infinite relationship. And that's the biggest problem, where they're at a stuck mode of up to a point, and now they're moving forward, but they're still locked into that same thing. And I think that's the thing, when you're opening the Pandora's box, if you can call it, about the energy relationship with the DNA, you're getting into that realm of because you're talking about energy of sound, energy of electromagnetic energy, and it keeps on going on and on down the rabbit's hole.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the problems with the modern scientific view is, like you said, their instrumentation is based upon the best intellect that we have today. It's not based upon anything intuitive, and it's not based upon anything from the higher faculties. The instruments that we have today in a scientific field are really just, they are a reflection and a manifestation of our best intellect. And as we should all well know, intellect is important in many ways, but it is also very, very limited, and that's a dangerous thing. And I think that's why science is really going in the way it is. They keep bumping their heads on this roof that they've created above them, And it's just a matter of time before they realize they're going to have to start venturing into different avenues. And really what it is they're going to be coming to a better understanding of what some of the leading scientists today have been finding, such as Greg Braden and other people in those fields, starting to look back into ancient forms of knowledge, more of like the mystery schools, looking into the more of the esoteric side. And that's really what it is with when you're talking about DNA and energy, is scientifically you can only get to a certain plateau and you have a roof above your head, but with a different understanding, and that's why it's applying more of the artistic side of the brain. It's applying more of the imaginative side, because really when you look back into mythology and you look into these mysteries, what it is it's allowing your higher faculties, your higher cognitive function, to really kick in so you can, I don't even want to say imagine some of the infinite, but you are able to better work with the idea of something infinite more so than just the intellect would be able to.
Well, and when you brought up in your movie, though, that which is where I found fascinating, that you tapped in about the shamans of the past,
mm-hmm.
had tapped into that knowledge and were able to utilize it and for political reasons, which we'll get into, is that understanding has been pushed to the side. But that was the area you had mentioned that they already tapped into it, and they were trying to, you know, continually unfolding. And instead of utilizing both the shaman side as well as the scientific side, as you say, let's say the on the matter side of looking at things, that for some reason, to me, it seems it was an issue of fear, because when you get into that one area, beyond what that you see in front of you, people tend to get have fear about it, and they also, which gets into a whole different issue, a whole different tangent. But can you expand on about I know I'm going off a different tangent with you, but
fine.
How is the with the energy system of the DNA, and how does it relate to a person's self-well-being? Because I think that's really more important to people out there who understand. Because then, you know, it gets into, then as you'll, I guess I'll explain it, gets into self and political side of things.
Absolutely. Well, what I get into, because it's more than just DNA, the reason why I had Dr. Bruce Lipton in the film is also because what DNA, as I was saying before, it's a bioelectric and bioacoustic transmitter and receiver. So it both receives subtle vibrations from the Schumann resonance of the earth, from just any type of phonons. It takes that information and then it disperses it through the body, amplified. And the best way to look at this is with the reason why I had Dr. Bruce Lipton in the film is because his understanding of the way that the body then reacts to our concepts and our beliefs. And the really, really interesting thing about that is, I think I put it in the film, is the somatic and the visceral side of the body, or the systems within the body. So when you have this consistent belief of there being something to fear, when there's some sort of lack, when you need security, when you feel like you need additional shelter, additional food, you need this, that, and the other, you need to kind of scrounge, you need to hoard, that leads to this fear mentality. And with that fear mentality, what's going to happen is you're in a fight or flight motion in your entire body. So what's happening is you are sending through your belief of there being a need for protection, that vibration is filtering to the DNA, to these transmitters and these receivers, and it is amplifying that and pushing that back out into the cellular structures of your body, and your cells are responding. Very scientifically, you know, the way that this is explained is very scientific, but it's also very symbolic, and I'll get into that in a second.
But it just keeps on going on, and what you're saying is basically it's a renaissancing from your own self, from your being, and then amplifying itself in a return. It's almost like throwing the hammer out there and it's hitting you back on the head because you're throwing the same hammer, and you're hurting you're hitting yourself with your own hammer. And since thoughts are things, and you're throwing those thoughts out there, and you have those same fear factor thoughts, you're re-amplifying those thoughts. It's almost like somebody who's getting depressed gets more depressed, and they go through that circle of manic depressant feelings, when in reality it has nothing to do with physiologically, it has more to do with their energy circle, basically, in retrospect.
Right, and what it is people, typically they don't understand what a messenger truly is. And what tends to happen is, going back to the old saying, don't kill the messenger, people should heed that call a little bit more than they have been, because...
Who's the messenger?
The messenger is absolutely anything, and it's weird how we pick up on tiny messages. It typically comes through our intuition, and it will bleed into our intellect, and that's typically where it starts dying and going through a catabolic phase.
So you're saying, like,
so
the
messenger, such as in a global sense, this cancer that I talk about in the film,
right.
The cancer itself is demonized, and that's something that I try and shy away from, is how people demonize this disease. They demonize the NWO. They demonize the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, and all these people. And what the problem is with that is, these are messengers. Like, I'm not saying that we have to, in a sense, try and, you know, assimilate those specific people into our, you know, into our lives, but the message that they are bringing along, because there's, you know, two understandings of the, you know, physical life. Or life in general. There's the personality, there's the identity, that's our ego, and then there's the essence. And we're not trying to assimilate the message of the personality of what's going on. We don't care about the personality of the NWO. What we care about is the essence. What is it telling us about ourselves? Because collectively, we have created this NWO. We have created this elite. We have created Codex Alimentarius, and we've created all these different programs, such as Admiralty Law, and things that really take away our freedom. They turn us into slaves, and the problem is we demonize the physical vehicle, but it's not the physical vehicle. It is our acceptance of those things. It is our compliance of all those rules and that enslavement, because deep down inside, we don't realize we want to be slaves because we're too afraid of true freedom.
Yeah, that's very niche geek. It's very much saying, in essence, first you hit two things. One is, in reality, like in Tao Te Ching, it says, like, your enemy is really the shadow of your own self. And, and people keep on, the biggest problem is people separate things. They're like, you, me, everything separated, but they don't realize that we're all one collective consciousness. And if we have something that's very negative, that's really a reflection of our own universal consciousness, and that it has to do with our own self. So if you're angry at somebody doing you feel something very negative and he's controlling and all that stuff, that's basically because it's all of us, and we haven't really taken, and what I like about in your film is really saying, hey, dude, you all are in one big boat, wake up. You know, it's about your self-esteem, your self-worth when you get down to it, and, you know, if the problem of them is also part of you, because we're all collectively part of the same unit. But,
absolutely.
But it seems to me that it gets into an issue of self-worthiness, though. On the whole, if somebody consistently, and this is where it gets into the shamanic and all that stuff, mm-hmm. If you consistently hit somebody over the head and tell them, belittle them, and you allow that person to hit you over the head, that allowing, you actually volunteered to allow that to happen consciously, or subconsciously, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
So, in essence, you're saying, I know, like the world, we've consciously chosen to allow the Rockefellers, or whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. to be in control and create the New World Order. So the first step is basically taking responsibility and having an awareness of it.
Absolutely, and that's precisely the reason for our need to understand the esoteric side of nature. Like the magi and the shamans and the sages of antiquity, like we were just talking about, the reason for their rituals and their ceremonies were to integrate our intellectual understandings of our lives, our experiences, our emotions, our will, our activity, to integrate all of those and assimilate them into wisdom. Because wisdom is that which cannot be given or taught, but must be realized within the higher faculties of man, the spiritual faculties. And the reason why I get into that is because when we look back on all these what we call primitive ceremonies, and when we look at holidays, you know, such as April Fool's, and a lot of the works that I'm going to be getting into will actually show the authentic, original reason for a lot of these holidays. And what it is actually, without a true understanding of these rituals and these ceremonies that our ancient forefathers, the magi and the shamans, the ones that they went through, without understanding it on a deeper level, you're just going to look at it and say it's very primitive, like they didn't have as well of a scientific understanding of the world. But what it was is the reason why they were so closely knit with nature is because nature is another messenger. Everything is run. This is why I like Manly Palmer Hall gets into it's just the understanding of principle behind nature. Because when you look at nature, nature is not just the trees and the rocks and the oceans. It's a principle. It's how things are built. And with that understanding, the reason why they were so close to nature is because they understood principle and they learned through nature. And one thing, such as ayahuasca shamanism down in South America, one big reason why that has become so popular in the newer age is completely different and completely gone away from the ancient understanding of why that was there to begin with. It wasn't fashionable back then, and it also wasn't looked at as recreational. It was very, very serious. It wasn't dogmatic, but it was very spiritual, very, very spiritual. Because what it did was you would go through a complete ego collapse. And that is the breaking down and the disillusionment of this cultural canon that we have. And it's basically breaking down the idea of what we think we are. And that's the reason why we have such problems on this earth, is because we have such steadfast convictions and these beliefs, and they crystallize in a form. And then as a collective society, we manifest them into larger things, such as military powers, industrial military complex, into entire law systems. And we manifest it into things like that because that is the precipitation of our ego. That is a complete reflection of our ego. And the biggest problem that I see is not the fact that there are specific individuals out there doing that. It's the fact that we are allowing it and we don't understand what true freedom is. One of the biggest things that I teach is the actual definition of freedom cannot be put into words. It's not something that you can be given, and it's not something that you can attain along the way. It's something that you realize that you've always had. And that's the problem, because people don't want that. People want the freedom that you'll see on a bumper sticker or you'll see in a slogan somewhere. That's the kind of freedom that people want, because they want the entire world to change, but they don't want to have to change it all within themselves. And that's the very reason why we have such problems today, such as Codex Alimentarius, such as this growing globalist movement, this idea of global warming and Gaia worship, and, you know, and what we're coming into, this new age of the feeling of, well, we need the whole Barack Obama, we need to somewhat, you know, solidify our medical care, this, that, and the other, expanding government because it's better for the people. Well, what it is truly, it's not better for the people, it's better for the collective whole. But the collective whole that we're talking about here is the ego. It's not true self-responsibility, because having a government that will take care of all your medical concerns is not self-reliant. That's not self-governing. Right. And just in my neighborhood, there's a person who has this huge sign on their right outside that says, a government big enough to give you everything that you need is a government big enough to take away everything you have. And, mixing and matching a couple other words in there, saying, you know, a false ego, the same thing with a false ego, you know, as a personality big enough to give you all that your desires want, is a personality big enough to pretty much level you. And that's what I fear, is the fact that we don't see these things as messengers. We just see them as physical objects that need to be overcome physically.
Right. We just look at, well, most people, and I deal with a lot of people in politics and stuff, and they're you know, they'll sit on, you know, they'll try to, they tend to also want to categorize people, like, what team do you belong on? You know, liberal, neocon, and I said, well, that's where the first problem is. You're all, it's all, you don't get it. That's not the, that's, you're, it's just as bad as them then. You know,
yeah.
You're sitting there going on, you know, and they go, well, Chavez is just as tyrant as Bush. I mean, you can go on and on about in the politics, but people, they, like, I was very much involved with the anti-Yucca Mountain and a lot of more liberal politics. But then they looked at me like cross-eyed when I was extremely pro-Israeli and said, hell, it's, you know, about what's going on over there, or about, I said, about the tax system. I said, well, we shouldn't even have an IRS. I'm talking very, you know, on the lower level, because I have a whole different ideology about the monetary system. But, they look at me cross-eyed and says, well, you should be paid, from what you're buying, pay on taxes, take away the IRS. Ideology that's more libertarian, or to them maybe even more conservative. And they're looking at me, well, wait a second, I thought you were part of our team, you know. And I said, you guys don't get it. It's not, you know, it's, we're all in the same boat, man, you know. And it, with Barack Obama, I was actually part of his campaign, and not because of his politics. I think in his heart, he has a good heart, and that's what I'm betting the table on. But on a whole, that's just, it doesn't really help if people are looking for security blankets to save them, which you put in your movie, which was great. It's a messiah thing about, oh, there's some savior going to save me, and which they, Christians have totally lost the message of Jesus. They think that he, you know, that's why they threw out certain books that what he was really trying to express. Showing how, you know, instead of the savior complex, to show that, you know, the real problem issue is dealing with yourself and getting to your source of self. And I think if, to me, is a consciousness, if people got into the, and looked into raising their self-worthiness and self-worth, and that's part of what you're doing. You're on the path trying to break into that mold, because when you, to get to that, you, it's like looking in the mirror at self, of your true essence of yourself. When you see that, then you have spiritual freedom. Then you really are free, because you realize you're part of, and I don't want to sound like some Star Trek, we're part of the collective, but in a sense we are of all the same consciousness. And when people finally get that, then you are actually free, because then you realize, and that's what people, like, you heard about the Tree of Life, and like you're talking about on the Sefirot, but it's not really that. And I talk about them in Kabbalah, and they purposely mislead it, like in certain things. And there's a problem with a lot of Kabbalists, particularly the religious. They purposely cut out parts so people don't get it. But the Tree of Life is really, the leaves are all our souls, and the trees are all, we're all connected. And that's really the essence. We're all one conscious self. That's really the truth of Kabbalism, that they don't all like to divulge. And the leaves are just because we have different views, keeping our uniqueness. There's a duality, our uniqueness, yet we're all connected. And that's, if people realize that, you know, I don't care if, and realize it with, whether you're, I don't care if you believe what source, or Allah, or Buddha, or Tao, or shamanism, you know, we all have our different perspectives. But if you get to the source, that your true self, and realize who we are, all one big bundle, including the earth, including things around, then people get it. It's like, I don't get into the ET issue, but people ask me, how come the extraterrestrials aren't here to save us? And that's the problem. They're not going to save your ass. They're probably just sitting there watching when the humans are going to finally get it. And that's how I believe.
Well, that's pretty much what it is. I'm glad you mentioned two things, such as both with the Messiah of Jesus and the idea of the Messiah of Barack Obama. With that idea, it really doesn't matter, and this gets to the heart of all of my work, it doesn't matter. Barack Obama as an ideal is not Barack Obama as the person. And Barack Obama could have, like, the greatest outlook and the best intentions for our, you know, for at least the United States and maybe even a global future. But the idea behind it gets lost because it's in the communication of that, because people will hear what they want to hear. It's selective hearing and it's selective understanding, because within all of this, specifically through the media, through word of mouth, what's happened is there's this idea of change and hope. Everybody has a different idea of what change and hope is. So what happened is the failure came in and the integration, the feminine, the assimilation, the receptive message going into the people. So the people integrate it very in a false way, and what happens is they create this illusion, this symbol of change, a symbol of hope, and then they apply it to Barack Obama. And the problem that I really saw was not in the individual himself, but was in all the people that were holding him up as some sort of icon, somebody that was going to change things for us. And it's the same thing. I'm glad you mentioned
the idea
of Jesus.
It's like what you just brought up, which is interesting. It's the masculine, and I brought it up in my show last, because I was doing it for the, you know, feminism and, you know, celebration of Mother's Day. But you brought up about the masculine and feminine, where people have a tendency looking for the father figure to the protector to save ourselves. You know what? Could you expand? Because a lot of people out there probably don't realize that we tend to forget the mother aspect and why the feminine side has been purposely, and with, of course, we've chosen it, and I say that collectively,
right,
to subdue our feminine side. And feminine has nothing to do whether it has a penis or a vagina, by the way.
Exactly.
It has to do with that, in called the understanding, the receptor, as you put it, as opposed to the masculine, which is more as giving, but people have utilized the masculine as the security blanket, which can you expand upon how, because that's, I think, a core issue of, which is part of the male Jesus thing, the Savior, or Barack Obama, or whoever.
Well, absolutely. I mean, this actually gets back to initially what we were talking about, energy. Energy is really a whole study in and of itself, but more specifically, when energy becomes polarized, such as just looking at electromagnetics, it's giving a positive and a negative pull. And you immediately have the masculine and the feminine proclivities once you have those polarities. So the masculine being more active, energizing, creative, a penetrating power. And the feminine is a receptive, earthy, assimilating, and responsive power. And when you understand the esoteric nature of creation, maintenance, and destruction, you'll come to understand that everything has a principal sexual nature. Even in conversations, you know, you have the active masculine speaker who is energizing and impregnating the listener's feminine energy. And the feminine energy is fluid in nature. It's formless, just like matter. Matter is formless until given a vibration, a masculine communication. And that's why I named the film Kymatica. It's the effects of sound on matter, the effects of the masculine on the feminine. And the reason why I get into
Ben,
that,
I have to tell you, well, I got it. This is just, I don't take you off, but I got an email. A lady sent me an email about your name of your movie. She thought at first when she saw it, she thought it was going to be about sex.
Well, it's funny, and I get that.
Kymatica. I says, no,
Kymatica.
No,
I absolutely get that, but what's interesting enough about that is she's probably more right than she understands, is the fact that there is a core sexual nature to everything, and it's not sex the way that we would think of it. It's sexual in the sense of, in a conversation, you can't have two masculine, because that's two people talking at the same time, and neither are being receptive. You need the feminine and the masculine proclivities, at least those two values, for one to be impregnated by the masculine, by the one who is speaking. So the one who is listening is taking on the feminine role, and then the creation of that union is the thought. And then the thought is released back to the universe because it does not belong to those two parents. And it's really interesting because that is that's a very rudimentary way of looking at it, but that is necessarily the foundation of all creation that we see. It's you have the mother, the father, and the creation, the son or the daughter, whatever it is. And the reason why I get into that in my work, and as you were saying, the stifling or the suppression of the feminine is really the suppression of the receptive force, the idea of assimilating information, integrating information. The idea that we were talking about with...
But isn't it really selective suppression? Because they're suppressing on one issue, but then they're making it, amplifying on another, because there's always going to be it's like we're telling, they're giving out information, like the masculine side, you're saying, propaganda through whatever media, and people are listening, so they're absorbing it one way or another, but they're only, and it's being selectively done.
Oh, absolutely. It's through the lower drives, and it's very, very, if you look into Michael Tsarion's work, he gets into it brilliantly, where he shows how the subversive use of sacred symbolism is how he puts it. And in the media, what's actually done is through colors, through noises, through catchwords, through phrases, it plays upon the lower chakras, the lower drives, the lower animal instincts, which is really, it all boils down to fear. Like the lower drives being like fear, sex, security, having that security blanket, the lower drives that keep us too really more in the somatic state than the visceral state, more in the fight or flight than the growth and development. So yes, it is selective in a very large part.
It's interesting that you said that, because that makes sense, because like the lower chakra connecting to earth, well, we're going to play on the fear factor, whether you're going to be able to survive, because that's the fear factor. Your sexual one, the next chakra, will play on your sex thing, you know, will subdue that and manipulate that for you, is like, you know, the rabbit situation or whatever you want to call it, depending on the society that's amplified. And of course, then your other chakra, which is their abundant side, is the taste for the illusionary, the Midas of gold, you know, basically.
Right.
And so I can see how that makes a lot of sense, what you're talking about, how they're, that's just keeping you down instead of opposed to working off the and separating you from getting to your source of your will within your throat or from your heart or from your higher mind. Well, you know, that makes a lot of sense with your, you know.
Absolutely. And the reason, getting back to what you said about the misunderstanding of the true message of Jesus, the whole concept of Jesus. A lot of people get into, did he exist, did he not exist, what Egyptian character was he modeled after, exactly what was going on the physical side, and a lot of things that were thrown out, even the things that were somewhat brought back out through the Dead Sea Scrolls, is the true message of it, and that's the ultimate understanding of it, because in a way, it's almost
from Mary Magdalene's gospel, where he talks about, and also the Book of Thomas, which they found in Ethiopia, as well in the Dead Sea Scrolls. By the way, they haven't shown all the Dead Sea Scrolls because of the fear. That was a Bagan thing. They made a deal with the Pope, by the way, because they selected, didn't want to show what really, because it talks about Jesus was born in Nazareth, not Bethlehem, in the Dead Sea Scrolls. And that would freak out everybody. And that's why if you ever go in there, they watch. There's such heavy, if you take a picture, they will take your cameraman on the spot. But you brought in about, what was the line about, if you don't have it, you'll never have, I forgot how it goes now. My mind went blank out. You know that, you used it in your movie. What Jesus said.
If you bring forth what is within you, what you bring forth will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you, what you do not bring forth will destroy you. And I believe that was that might be the one that you were talking about.
Yeah, that was also in the Dead Sea Scrolls, but then it's also in the book Gospel of Thomas that conveniently they don't want to utilize, and it's also the same similar words are utilized in Mary Magdalene, which happens to be another gospel that they don't want to talk about because, oh my God, it turns out that was his wife and maybe he had a kid. But
right.
That is, I think, says it all there, man. I mean, that tells you exactly what is the problem. And you, that whole statement, I mean, really encapsulates your movie about the cancer, which I want to get into, of society and what the nature of real cancer and self and ego and how that correlates to our true selves. Can you
right.
elaborate on that?
Well, are you talking about that one statement from the Dead Sea Scrolls?
Well, no. The statement you had encapsulates basically your movie, I believe.
Right.
But it gets into an aspect you bring up in your movie, and we talked about briefly about the cancer and how about the parasite relationship and how what a cancer is, and people don't realize what the mechanics of cancer, and there's actually societal cancer, and how that's manufactured by our own society of universal consciousness, and how it relates to Earth and our nature around us and our surroundings.
Right. Well, I mean, this. I think I even bring this out in the movie that what cancer cells are truly are just. They are cells that have become radical. They do not communicate with the rest of the community, if you will. So really what's happening is the fact that there is a nature. Your body obviously goes, you know, through the flow with its cycles, its rhythms, in a natural function, a natural flow. And anything to disrupt that would be seen as a dis-ease, some type of disharmony, or, you know, it's unbalanced in a way. And the reason why I bring that out as a cancer upon the earth is because what it actually is kind of the abandoning of one whole side of our understanding of life. We have the mechanical view, we have the scientific view, we have the masculine, you know, external, exoteric understanding of the world, and we've actually completely even forgotten that there was another side. And one thing that I bring out a lot, because I get a lot of emails on this, is a lot of people will ask me specific questions in emails such as, you know, well, this is spirituality, and how can spirituality do this or that or the other, or how, you know, how is it explained like this? And what I always get to is I'll respond to these people and say, how did you come to that understanding that that's what spirituality was, or that's what freedom is? Because a lot of people, they get bogged down and they crystallize their understanding of things, and they define it so much that it becomes so rigid that it is a whole other religion and a dogma in and of itself. People can't break free from it because they are a slave to their own dialogue within themselves. And that is a complete, that right there is a cancer in a sense, because it is not communicating with the whole other half, the intuitive side, the understanding of, well, yes, there is the exoteric, there is the outside world, but there is also an internal world. So it is basically the confounding of tongues, the divorce from nature, not understanding that there is a whole other side to nature than what we see with our eyes, what we smell, you know, what we feel, what we hear, what we can taste. There's a whole other side to it that we're not understanding, and that is a miscommunication. And the reason why I get into Logos, the understanding of that divine communication, the divine word, is this communication between nature and what we are right now has been cut off in a sense. We are still receiving it, but it's almost as if it's a completely different language to us now, because we don't know how to comprehend it. We don't have the feminine ability to integrate it, assimilate it, be a receiver of that information. So in a lot of ways, we have become, through this neglect of shamanic work, the work of the sages and the magi, through all of this internal work, the work of like the shadow and the darker content and processing all of this, because of that neglect, what's happened is we have become we have selected ourselves to become this cancer upon the earth. And we are, and it's not even us as the, you know, who we are truly. It's not the essence of us, but it is the role that we have taken on, because in a sense, all we've become is a role, it's an identity, and we've forgotten the essence of ourselves. You know, when you ask somebody who they are, they're first going to tell you, well, I'm a mother, or I'm a father, or I'm a doctor, or, I won this award, or I'm a father, I have three kids, my kids are doing this. It's all about this type of identity. It's all about some type of personality, these things that we think we are, completely abandoning the idea of the essence. And so that is a miscommunication in and of itself, and that's what I try and bring about in the film, is the fact that it is largely a part of a miscommunication, and it is very, very, very simple to get back on track. All it takes is a new understanding, and a new understanding of what freedom truly is, and how we enslave ourselves. We are not enslaved by an external source. We enslave ourselves, and then we externalize the tyrant into something else, so we have somebody to blame other than ourselves, because God forbid we take, responsibility for the things that we think, right?
So if, in retrospect, with what you're saying, what would somebody out there, Joe Blow or Sari Q or whatever out there, and they look at and they go, okay, this sounds real cool and all that. Well, what do I do? I mean, what in your eyes should somebody do to change and open their phenomenon receptors as a conscious? Because it starts off one ripple, which carries on, I believe, it to another ripple. But how would somebody in the mechanical sense, if there is one, or what you if somebody came to say, Ben, how do I do this? What do I do? What would you say?
Well, it's really quite simple, but it's very difficult to verbalize, because I understand how people would like to understand the things that I'm saying and the way that they interpret the specific terminology. So I guess like the best way that I could say it is that we are already there. You know, we already have this communication. We already have the ability. It's just a matter of using it. It's
so
a matter of
being
real.
So it's basically, first step is awareness of it.
Exactly, absolutely. Awareness, awareness is the best way to put it, because that's really what it is. People aren't even aware of these higher faculties. They're not even aware that there's something other than what the five senses can detect. And it's the same as any type of muscle group. If you do not use it, if you are consistently stuck in this five-sense material world, you're not going to be using these higher faculties, and just like muscles, they are going to atrophy. And it's just a matter of consistently taking a step back. Instead of feeling like we have to do something, that we have to, wave around picket signs and sign petitions and get involved in things, which are all good, that there's no problem with them, but what we also need to do is there's a whole other side of looking inwardly. And it's
right.
A lot easier than people make it. It's really just looking inwardly, because everything is symbolic in nature. And everything that's going on around us, we have chosen. We understand the terminology, just not intellectually. We understand it in a more our feminine proclivities, they do understand this this symbolism. But the problem is we don't know how to integrate it into our intellect. And that's really what it is. It's this lack of a union between our feminine and our masculine. So, I know it might sound really difficult for the average person to be like,
not really.
What is he trying to say?
No, not really, because what you're saying is, making it real, it's pretty simple. It's not really quasi at all. It's basically first, and it is, and people make things more complex than it is, and that's why they make millions of books, and it's all, to me, bullshit. You can just go, it's basically one, is becoming aware, and now it was like opens the, being aware is the first step, basically, of things, which will lead into the change of the way you think in your belief system, because with that goes in the duality of continual awareness, which then man changes, opens up your receptors, where therefore, once you really have that essence of freedom, which is really what you're talking about, is the unification and understanding of the universe around us. Therefore, your truer self becomes, you see yourself, and therefore, it literally, I don't say magically, but then your self-worth changes overnight, basically. Because then you realize, you know, the illusionary things of the old, that the belief system from that was cut off, which is the cancer side, has diminished you to think that you, which is the cancer side you're talking about, to make you feel like less worthiness. Therefore, you have all these other things that become the symptoms of the tumor, which is the needy, or save me, or I'll let them do it, or who will have change, or the government will save me, or even on the other side, the narcissistical side of things, and say, hey, I need more cars, I need more money, more power, so I can control and control and control, which is a whole nother illusion. So then realizing we're all the same. We're all one big unit. So basically, it gets back to the Gestalt awareness, basically, of, you know, to the point of understanding, of what's really going on, which is sort of funny because if you go down from the very fundamentals within the Zohar, the very fundamentals within real Islam, the fundamentals with all Christianity, the real truths now, not the facade stuff, is Buddhism and Hinduism and those, and the ancients of the Egyptians and Native Americans and the Hopis, they all have that very, there's the key, you know, and that the key is really being awareness, you know, of, and that's, you know, it's funny you brought up about the universe and the sexual thing, because actually in the Zohar it talks about the masculine side as being the human soul, and the universe is actually, the universe is the masculine, and the human soul is like the feminine, and when they unify, and you know how you get that buzz, like, oh my, I feel enlightened all of a sudden, you get that buzz, they call that your spiritual climax, literally, or spiritual orgasm in Hebrew. So it's supposed to be like, you get that buzz because you have that connection which generates a new, your vibration actually creates a new resonance, which is what gets back to the whole circle thing, what you're talking about. By doing the awareness and all that changes our resonance, which changes our DNA, which changes the whole thing and changes our world. And that's basically, in a nutshell, what you're basically trying to emphasize, I believe.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, what it is, and the reason for this new project that I'm taking on, the Hanged Man Project, is because just if one thing that can come out of this is just the idea that there is no need for a savior beyond ourselves. There is no need for some type of messiah or idol or icon or something to worship or something to follow, somebody to listen to, somebody to make sure everything's all right, that hierarchical figure. If we can move away from that and understand, the reason why I emphasize art and ritual within the Hanged Man Project is because really what it is it's an expression of yourself and a deeper expression of yourself. Even if you can't intellectualize and verbalize what it is that you're expressing, you are expressing it. And that's why, I mean, you have a lot of people saying that, oh, it's so primitive, the fact that the ancients used so much art and ritual, it's probably because they had very little understanding of the world around them, so the best thing they could do to entertain themselves was have these little rituals where they put on masks and sang music and had art. But what it is they had more of a fundamental understanding of the true principles of nature than we could ever even imagine today, you know, and the idea of awareness, the reason why it's so important is because true awareness comes when you have one of those deeper insights. And those deeper insights do not come from getting some type of like slogan or some type of reading some book from the outside world. Those are all tools. They're all very good, but it is not integration until you have your own deeper insight. And that is why there's a book called If You Meet the Buddha on the Road, Kill Him. I think it was Sheldon Kopp who wrote that book. There's one passage in that book that I absolutely loved, and he said, the truth cannot be given. It cannot be put into words. It cannot be handed or taught to somebody else. It has to be realized from within. And this is what the ancient shamans and the magi and the sages of old understood. So it had to be put into allegory, into poetry, into art, into symbolism. It had to be put into these things, because then the way that we bring, if we ever bring it out into the intellect, it has to be done through wisdom, meaning right. We have to integrate that into our own experiences and link the two. And that's really the problem that we have today, is the fact that kids are watching movies and learning about what they think love is before they ever experience it in the real world. So they think they know how to react in certain situations. And there's this, you know, overwhelming idea, this, you know, concept, which has really deified itself in our society, to where whenever something happens, we've already experienced it before we've ever actually felt it in our lives. We've already gone through it in a movie or in a book or in a conversation with somebody else, and we think that that is reality. So we will regurgitate that reality in our life, and no wonder we get stuck in this rut. No wonder we're so rigid and everybody feels like they need change. Everybody's crying for change, but they don't even know what change truly is, because change will not come. And this is another reason for the Hanged Man Project. Change will not come through a physical revolution, through a bunch of people getting together and terrorizing either a government or a religion or, you know, some type of military power. Change comes from within. Even if, you know, something were to happen, something catastrophic were to happen, to where all the key players of the elite and the NWO just magically, for some reason, drop dead, it wouldn't change anything, because they didn't choose to be there. They did, in a sense, but we allowed them to become that for us, for our own understanding. We put them in that position. We allowed them to rise to that level of power because we needed somebody or something to reflect our inner tyrant. And unless we deal with our inner tyrant, nothing is ever going to change on the physical plane. And that's why I brought about the whole Hanged Man Project, was to understand.
When's your Hanged Man come out?
Well, I'm actually working on a film right now. And that's going to be a little bit, it's taking a little bit longer than I imagined, because there's a lot of other things going on in the process. But what's actually going to happen, there's going to be a film that I'm going to put out called The Hanged Man. But The Hanged Man Project is slowly coming together, where there's actually going to be events for people to come together, display their art, explain to people. And I don't want them to be big events. I'm trying to make them more personal. I don't want any more than maybe like, you know, 25, 30, maybe 50 tops. You know, I'm not trying to make this, you know, lucrative at all. There's no money that's going to be passed around. This is just something for people to get together. There's not going to be a single leader of the group, maybe some type of organization. But the reason why I even put on the mission statement that once this is created, I'm going to step away from being like the main part of the Hanged Man Project, because the last thing I want, specifically as I noticed with the Zeitgeist movement and with other specific movements and revolutions that people are trying to bring about, people become icons. They become the idols. They become the the leaders. And that's the last thing I want, because that in and of itself...
Stepping out from your ego.
It's a complete... Right. And that's because right there, if people were to follow somebody's ideal, even if they absolutely love the idea... If people were to follow it, yes, they might get a better understanding of certain things, but it is internally completely contradicting the idea of self-governance, self-responsibility.
Hey, Ben, we're coming to the head here, so
okay.
Really quickly, how could people contact you? Do you have a website that they can check out your new stuff or what's going on, and how they can get hold of your films?
Absolutely. The Kymatica can be found through talismanicidols.org. That's the production company's name. So it's talismanicidols.org. And for Esoteric Agenda, you can just go to esotericagenda.net. And if anyone wants to email me, there's contact information on there. I encourage anybody to email me with any question whatsoever. I try to get back to absolutely everybody, and I appreciate, you know, any comments, concerns, suggestions. So I encourage anybody to get a hold of me if they'd like.
Well, Ben, I want to really thank you for coming on my show. I definitely would love to have you back again.
Absolutely.
On my show. I mean, there's so much information, man. It's just squeezing in here.
Yeah.
But, again, I want to thank you, for coming on my show, and it's been a truly great honor. And with that, I will close with, I think this song would elaborate on everything, We Belong, which is by Denise Vasquez, and check out her site at denisevasquez.com. Thank you all, and God bless you. Thank you.
I've tried to tell you, 20 times I've cried alone, with some surprise how well you cut my feelings to the bone. Don't wanna leave you really, just wanna break the ice. Do I look silly to you when I yield to your advice? When you say seguro que es verdad, el cariño que es sincero no se acaba con crueldad. Olvida lo que fuimos y desprecias lo más bien, pero juntitos creímos que la luna era de miel. Junto a ti solo es mi ángel. Como radio de luz que ha brotado el cielo, no importa por venir sin sufrir, es mi triste destino. Junto a ti hasta el fin de camino. Close your eyes and try to sleep now, close your eyes and try to dream. Clear your mind and do your best to try and wash the palette clean. We can't begin to know now how much we really care, but I hear your voice inside me and I see your face everywhere. Now I say we belong to the light, we belong to the thunder, we belong to the sound of the words we both fall in under. Whatever we deny or embrace, the worse or for better, we belong together. Junto a ti, junto a ti, solo es mi ángel. Junto a ti como brotado el cielo, no importa por venir sin sufrir, es mi triste destino. Junto a ti hasta el fin de camino.